Welcome to this chapter on vendor assessment. In this chapter, we'll go through the roles of vendors in the BPO ecosystem. What are the critical steps in vendor assessment? We also have a model, a 10C model that can be used for carrying out this. Then we have vendor selection and some common mistakes which are done in vendor engagement. So let us look at vendor assessment. What is vendor assessment? Now, in layman terms, it is assessing which vendor meets your requirements, right? For any, I would say, even a normal household need, right? Say, for example, you need to buy a furniture, right? You would probably explore 2-3 shops to look at which kind of furniture is to your liking in terms of the fitment to your room, what kind of aesthetics it has, design. And then you will look at the price point, how each of them is placed, and then you will finally try to get some feedback, and then you will go for a buy. So that's basic, but this is on a larger scale at a business level. So one has to be a little cautious and careful in doing the vendor assessment. So what are we doing under vendor assessment? We are basically going to evaluate the vendor, as I mentioned, and then approve selection of the vendor. What we also need to do is ensure that the vendor meets the organization standards and requirements. This is critical, right? We need to ensure that the engagement with the vendor is risk-free, right? You look for a vendor which is a low-risk vendor. Obviously, you will want somebody who is best in class as well and also be cost-effective. So these are kind of wishlists and some more in terms of a vendor who will have the advantage of mitigating the risk that you have, right? He should be able to cover your scope of services. He should be able to comply, right? Comply contractually, as well as if there are any regulatory compliances, right? Security is a big issue in current time. So you need a vendor who can handle the security aspect also. So you basically are sharing a lot of confidential data with him, right? So you need to ensure that the vendor will keep that data secure. He'll ensure data privacy. He will also ensure that the cyber risks are being taken care of, right? There is a lot of online threat, I would say, to data. A lot of, I would say, dark web dealings happening in terms of organizations capturing, holding on to data and demanding ransom, right? So basically, these are just some of touch points which we need to look upon while we are doing the vendor assessment. Let us look at this in a little more detail. Now, for carrying out a vendor assessment, you can refer this risk assessment matrix template, right? What this essentially does is it lets you chart down in a tabulated manner what kind of placement you have on the risk side. Primarily, everything revolves around the risk of the engagement, correct? The engagement can be successful. It may not as well, right? So but that's a huge risk to the business, correct? So let's look at the risk assessment matrix template. And this is how the matrix is. So you will see here that you have a risk rating key, right? What happens is you have a gradual, I would say, gradient rating the risk from low to extreme. What is happening is this is divided into basically four levels: low, medium, high, and extreme. And then you have weightages. For example, 0 is assigned to low, 1 to medium, 2 to high, 3 to extreme, right? And what do these imply? 0 will imply the situation is acceptable. It's like zero risk. You don't need to do anything, right? 1, it's a medium category. It is as low as reasonably practicable, right? 2 is generally unacceptable. Now the risk level is increasing, correct? And then if it's a rating of 3, it means it's extreme. The risk is intolerable, right? And against each of these rankings or weightages, you have, I would say, actions to be taken, right? So if you have something in the low risk, which is acceptable criteria, what it says is it's okay to proceed. You don't need to worry. If it's 1, the risk is low, right? You take mitigation efforts, you mitigate that risk. If it's two, generally unacceptable. It's not easy to mitigate it in the normal course of time. What you need to do there is seek support, right? But when you see that it's getting intolerable, it's beyond, has a rating of 3, you then place the event on hold, right? So primarily this helps you assess how the evaluation will happen in terms of the risk rating. With the risk, you have a severity assigned as well. So if you see it gradually flows down to each of the levels. The severity you will see is aligned to the levels. For low, it's acceptable. Medium, it's tolerable. High, it's undesirable. Extreme is intolerable, right? And what does this imply? When the severity is acceptable, it means there is little to or no effect on the event. Basically, the leftmost extreme portion is like your normal situation. You don't have any risk available present there. In case of any minor stuff, it is okay, again acceptable to move ahead. As you move ahead, you are increasing your tolerance. So the second level is, it says it's tolerable, the effects are felt, right, but not critical to outcome. You can still take mitigation efforts and progress. As you go to the third level, where you have generally unacceptable, you will see that the severity becomes undesirable. Now, what are we saying here? Undesirable means there is an impact, right? There will be an impact to the course of action and outcome. Now, this is going to, the last two are going to be business impacting stuff. The last one, intolerable, if you proceed with such a level of risk, it could result in a disaster, right? It's like knowingly you are going ahead into a red zone. So this is the first half of the metrics template, where you have the risk ratings and severity. And if you look at the second half, where we talk about the likelihood, right? So here what we are doing is we are gradually placing, or I would say highlighting them in terms of how likely the risk is. So if you see at the left side, you have factors which say improbable, risk is unlikely to occur. If it's possible, risk will be likely to occur, and if it's probable, whether it will occur. Based on this, what is happening is you have a grading which goes from low, medium, medium to high, right? And then you will see that you have weightages, right? For the lower part, if you see, it goes like this, it's 1, 2 and 3. And then as it goes to the medium and higher side, it goes to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and so on till 12. Basically, both these are the parts of a single template, and this helps you chart down or place where you can position your current risk identified and what kind of severity or likelihood it has, right? We also have another, I would say, graph, which says what actions can be taken in terms of where your risk is placed, right? So that's something which we'll touch upon a little down the line. But this is a template which is which can be used to do the risk assessment, right? You basically chart it down. In normal course, just citing a risk doesn't help, right? It's like I say that I'm living in a building which is, say, 40, 50 years old. So by saying there is a risk of the ceiling to collapse, right? That's a risk identified, right? But what is the severity? What is the impact? Unless you chart it down, narrow down to what immediate action should be taken, you won't be able to get an outcome out of that or prevent that risk. So what one needs to do is carry out the risk assessment, find out where it is in terms of placement, in terms of the likelihood and the severity, and take actions accordingly. Let us look at these in terms of how this helps the vendor assessment. What happens is you identify top vendors, right? You will want them, obviously you will want the engagement to help you reduce costs, right? You will want that your efficiency be increased, business improves, the relationship is strengthened. But what needs to be actually done is the factors need to be charted and ensure that you have a rating available with you, right? in terms of, because there will be multiple vendors, it will not be just one vendor, right? You will need to assess at least bare minimum 3, for a larger scale 5 at least, right? So you need to have a risk ranking for each of them. Where does each of these vendor rank in terms of the risk handling capacity, right? Let's look at the vendor assessment criteria. Now, what happens under the vendor assessment criteria, right? What you are trying to do is you are trying to find a vendor who can support your business goals, right? You would want the vendor to align with your company mission, the ethics, right? You will want him to deliver in the required cost. You will want the quality to be of acceptable level. You will also want a vendor to have a cultural harmony, right? So these are kind of wish lists that you need, right? But is the vendor capable of providing all those things, right? We don't know. And just a single interaction won't help you identify the capability of a vendor, right? For this, you need to follow an extensive process, right? You need to be very thorough with the process and ensure that a proper due diligence is done in doing the assessment. Remember that this forms the base of the engagement. Choosing the wrong vendor can put the entire relationship in jeopardy, right? So what is a vendor and supplier assessment criteria? So we have a checklist available with us, right? And this is, again, as I mentioned, all these frameworks, templates can be used as reference, right? And you should apply them to your current need and engagement. So this is a good, I would say, assessment criteria checklist. And what essentially happens is you have a criteria. So this one talks of competency. And each criteria, you have actions, right, which can be taken. So if you look at competency as a criteria, right, so this talks of competency. What would you want under competency, right? You need to ensure that the vendor has offerings which touch upon all these aspects. So under competency, what you are doing is basically you are checking for the experience, right? How experienced is the vendor? You may ask a vendor for a history of their business. You can check their online presence, right? So what you need to, step one is under competency, find the experience in delivering that particular output, right? Second is customers, right? Does the vendor have customers who he has successfully catered to, right? You can request for the vendor for customer references. And this is again a very important aspect. And this is something we do regularly also, right? So when somebody recommends you a product or something, it is like you are taking a first-hand feedback of the user. He is sharing his feedback in terms of how his experience has been with the product, right? Similarly, for the vendor, you should reach out to at least a couple of customers who have experience of the vendor's relationship, right? And they can vouch for the vendor's capability to deliver. Third is training and development. So remember that the BPO sector is largely dependent on the capability of the team to handle the load as well as the process. Now the processes are generally non-regular, correct? The processes may be legacy, the processes may be standard as well, right? But given that you are running this process over a complete cycle, sometimes it's 24/7, right? You will need to have competent people available to deliver this, right? And this is not a one-time task where you train 5 guys or 10 guys, put them on the process, that's done. No, this is a continuous requirement, at least especially in this sector. So you need to ensure that the vendor has a ongoing training and development plan. How does he ensure that there is a backup available to the team? Those skills are available. What is the process of continuous training and development, right? And he needs to do this for all his customers, correct? The engagements, if you look at the large BPO outsourcing engagements, these are primarily engagements in years. They are not short term. So vendor needs to ensure that this kind of resources are available to deliver, right? Next is key personnel, right? What comes under key personnel? These are kind of your key team leads or probably domain experts if you are talking of a domain process. So it is important to meet with these key people and understand how they deliver on ground. What is the kind of actions they follow, what kind of team leadership skills they have. So this is an important aspect, because what happens is some of these are the face to the engagement, right? Face to the operations, not the engagement, right? These guys will lead and even probably interface with a spoke from the customer end. So it is important to understand how the handling is going to happen from the team level. It's like if you need to cite an alteration, right? Or if you need some change in the process deliverable, you are obviously not going to go and speak with, say, the 100 of the staff employed. You will speak with the key people, right, to get it delivered down the line, and which is where this comes into play. These key people are the ones who need to have good communication, good team skills, and they need to ensure that they're able to deliver this, right? And then the last one under competency is recruitment, right? As I mentioned, in terms of training and development, if there is attrition, now this particular industry does have attrition, and it's there in all the industries, not just BPO, right? How is recruitment handled, right? What is the time gap in getting a new person on board and ensuring that he is trained and skilled on the process? So recruitment plays another key aspect. So as you can see, under competency, you have these five criteria. Let us run through the other areas as well. The next one is capacity, right? Now you assessed competency of the vendor. Now you are trying to assess the capacity offering of the vendor. So what happens under capacity? You are basically trying to assess his capability to deliver volumes in terms of load, whether it's low, medium, high, whether it's fluctuating. So under capacity, what are the criteria that one should look at? First one is current and future orders, right? You should gather information to check what the capability is of the vendor to deliver overall, I would say, the total capacity, right? You need to gather information to see and assess what is the end-to-end capacity that the vendor can or is capable of delivering. And then you will have to see that from his markup, right? For example, in terms of unit, if you feel the vendor is capable of delivering 400 units in a day, right? You need to then assess what is your requirement and whether a variation can be carried out, right? For example, under 400, if my daily output is around 200, right, I know that the vendor is capable of doubling the capacity, right? So capacity is something that should be assessed, checked. Next is operational statistics. Again, this point touches upon the operations, right? It primarily has to do with evidence or checking with the vendor how he is running operations. And by running operations, you are primarily looking at two major aspects, right? Is it getting delivered on time? And most important, whether it is a quality product, right? So these two aspects are key outcomes under operations, and one should check statistics that yes, the vendor is capable of providing output which is a quality output, right? And lastly, again, resources, right? So resources, as we saw earlier also, they are key to most of the deliverables, right? Most, because this is a process oriented work, most of the job is done through effective resources, right? So what under resources, we again need to ensure that the team is supported with adequate systems, infrastructure and other requirements to deliver, right? Here you will need to ensure that if you are looking at a faster turnaround, right, if you are looking at quality aspects, right, you need to ensure that the team has systems in place, they have proper machines, I would say network, server setup, which will support them to deliver, right? So here we are talking of resources from a system perspective to support the human resources, right? So these are points that you would check under the capacity aspect. Let us look further on the consistency of performance, right? Now you've checked capability, capacity. Now you also need to ensure that the output or deliverables will be consistent, right? It can't be that you just get quality output for a day and next day onwards it deteriorates, right? So under this heading, what you would essentially want to do is check if there is consistent quality and service levels, right? You need to ensure that the deliverable will be of required quality and it will be consistent, right? You will have the same level of output available throughout, right? Somebody in the vendor team needs to monitor, manage this and ensure that there is a responsible person who is working on this, right? Here probably you can talk of the same team lead which we saw earlier under operations, or you may have an account manager specific for an account. So this is again another area where you have a touch point with the customer and it directly links to the deliverable. Again, under consistency of performance, the other factor is statistical process control, right? This again is directly linked to the quality of the product, right? There are multiple ways to measure and ensure and baseline quality requirements. So SPC is another I would say area where you can, if used in the correct manner, this will help measure the quality of the product. It will identify the trends. You will basically have a tolerance band, right? Not below this and not above this. So this helps you identify if there are slips in terms of the tolerance band. And it can also support corrective actions that can be taken without waiting for a problem to occur, right? So this criteria again, consistency of performance, helps you ensure that you tabulate with the vendor in terms of his ability to deliver consistent quality services. Let us look at the next one, which is now commitment to quality, right? Now you saw consistency, now you want to see the commitment, right? So what is covered under consistent commitment to quality, right? Under commitment to quality, the first thing you would want to do is check for reviews on the service. Now this is a verbal feedback that you are taking, right? You are basically looking at endorsements from customers who are vouching, yes, that this vendor is committed to quality and has been delivering seamless or flawless outcomes. So the first one is you are checking on endorsement. Next, you are talking on the quality management aspect. Now again, what under quality management? You are trying to basically look at what are the quality processes that are being followed, correct? You will want to look into the quality processes that the vendor is using. Processes ranging right from TQM, which is total quality management, or other quality controls, correct? Then you are coming down to the third one, which is the standards compliance, right? You have umpteen standards available today in the industry, and each one specific to each line of business. You do have general standards, which are like good to have for most of the organizations. ISO is a key example in a standard organization. So the ISO standards are something where vendors would, I would say, demonstrate compliance. They would get themselves certified and then say we are an ISO certified company. There are specific, for example, the QS 9000. Now this is for car manufacturing, right? You have PCI DSS, which is in the payments card industry. That's again important. You have HIPAA, which is under the medical fraternity. So what happens is vendors who are niche or who are wanting to maintain a certain standard in terms of quality level of deliverables, they would ensure that they comply to such, I would say, industry certifications. They would get themselves or the organizations certified, and then they would be a published, I would say, ISO 9001 certified, or you have a HIPAA certified resources available. So this compliance helps you get a view of how sensitive the vendor is in terms of wanting to maintain a certain level as well in terms of industry compliance, right? So after standards compliance, there's another aspect which talks about under commitment to quality, which is non-destructive testing. Now, non-destructive testing is not something which applies to each and every deliverable. This is covered under certain, I would say, technical aspects only of the deliverables, where you do a non-destructive testing to just to assess that, yes, the sustenance level is there under a given band. This, as I mentioned, it is not, I would say, regular for all, but yes, if it applies to your deliverable, this needs to be touched upon. And then finally, you have continuous improvement, right? All said and done, it is not about just delivering for a day. It is about how you sustain it, and also it is about how you better or improve this, right? Is you have changes in technology, changes in I would say systems. Is there a better way to deliver? Is there a faster way to deliver? So what is the continuous improvement that's happening? So that's another aspect which is also touched upon in the commitment to quality. Right? Let us look at the next one, which is the cost aspect. Now, cost, one would simply say it is what the vendor is offering, right? Now, when a vendor is submitting his proposal, right, one should ensure that the price he is quoting covers the cost of all the deliverables, including your reference to what level of quality is required, correct? It should not happen that you say it's an A deliverable required, a vendor quotes a price X, and then when you talk of quality of A, vendor says, yes, I will need a delta Y to provide that level of quality because I need certain more investment. That should not happen. The price point should be such that it covers all your requirement. And the second aspect is in terms of the cost analysis, right? You need to be very sure, because this is going to be a financial outflow, you need to be sure what is the cost, I would say, analysis in terms of whether it's fixed, what is variable, right? You have overheads, you have break even. So what costs are required to be covered, right, in terms of fixed and variable? The outflow, right, whether it is monthly, quarterly, right? It is based on certain, I would say, milestones, correct? So this, I would say, full cost analysis is something which should be touched upon when you are looking at the cost criteria, right? Let's look at cash and finance in continuation to cost, since we are on the finance part. So cash and finance, what happens is you are now trying to, under this criteria, check what kind of financial holding is there with the vendor, right? What can be done here? You can check the balance sheets. Now, balance sheets are records of finance, which are primarily available on an annual basis. So one can always refer the balance sheets and check official records of the vendors in terms of their financial stability, right? And these are published documents. The vendor needs to produce, or I would say, tally this at the end of each financial year. Some countries follow calendar year, but this is an instrument which can give you a good view and which will indicate what kind of assets are available with the vendor, what kind of I would say liquidities are there, right? Liabilities are there, sorry. Next is profit and loss. Now, this is again another financial instrument along with the balance sheet, and this will show you whether the supplier is making adequate profit or he is running at a loss, and this again is an indicator of the profitability of the vendor, right? After profit and loss, the other stuff that you can check is the credit rating, correct? Now, what happens is you have ratings available for I would say most of the financial institutions do a credit rating. So the vendor, if he has a rating which is low, that's a risk, right? You need to ensure that the credit rating for the vendor on the finance front is at an acceptable level, if not at the highest level, right? Because these firms again do a thorough assessment before I would say giving a particular rating to the particular organization. Finally, it's about financial reputation, right? You also need to check in terms of feedback what kind of financial reputation is carried by the vendor. How is the assessment or the feedback from the customers, right? In terms of, does the vendor raise any financial issues interim, or can he handle the finances till the next I would say payment cycle? So these are some of the points touched upon under cash and finance. Let us look at the next criteria, which is communication. Now, communication is I would say very, very important. This is because you are engaging primarily under outsourcing with vendors who are geographically apart, and there is a high level I would say of probability that the language of communication, I would say the base language, is different at both the places. While English as a language is used universally, you may have a difference in accents, right, in terms of speaking styles, in terms of pronunciations. So under communication, you need to ensure that the vendor and the customer, yourself, your organization, are having adequate understanding on what kinds of modes of communication will happen during the engagement. You have chats, videos, audio conferences, teleconferences, Zoom meetings now, currently Microsoft Teams is doing good, right? So on the communication, one needs to ensure that you have appropriate channels available in terms of remaining connected, because what will happen is any change, alteration or directive is going to get communicated, and that channel needs to be I would say easily available and comfortable with the with both the organizations. Moving ahead, this criteria talks of control on the internal processes, right? Now the vendor will have his own internal processes in the organization, right? Under this criteria, you have points to touch upon inventory, quality, operations, procurement, health and safety. Under inventory, what you would want to do is you would want to check, right, whether the vendor carries sufficient inventory, correct? There should not be, especially in terms of product deliverables, one needs to ensure that there is capability of handling inventory. Again, touching here on quality, you will see that quality is touched upon in most of the criteria, right? It's an important aspect. Operations, you can check in terms of on-time deliverables, whether the operations are happening seamlessly, correct? Procurement, again, this becomes important in terms of trying to find out if there is a need, what process the vendor follows and what is the TAT for him to get that material. So the procurement process becomes important. Now, as I mentioned, these are all templates, these are guidelines, and all of these may not necessarily apply. You need to pick and choose what aligns to your particular requirement. Lastly, health and safety and environment. Now, this talks about checking what kind of safety environment the vendor has and what kind of demonstration he is doing in terms of social responsibility, right, in terms of taking care of the health and safety of the employees. So these points are covered under the control of internal processes. If we have to move ahead and touch upon the next one, which is it's mentioned as CLEAR, but it talks more of the social responsibility, the corporate social responsibility aspect of the vendor, CSR as it is normally known. What is the criteria here? Whether the vendor is following ethical and legal standards, right? What you are trying to do is see whether there is evidence of the vendor following best practices, right? Best practices which are, I would say, harmonious with the environment. Whether they are, whether this good feedback or good ratings from industries. So this may not be a direct factor which will have a huge impact to the deliverable. But again, this is an important factor if you as an organization are concerned about giving back to the, I would say, environment or giving back to the society, and would want to ensure that your partners as well are into that particular area. After CLEAR, CSR, you have culture, right? So what gets covered under culture? Values and business drivers, right? So does the vendor have values, right? Relationships that are sustainable, partnerships that are sustainable for long, right? Does the engagements of the vendor with the existing customers, are they truly appreciated, right? Not just from a deliverable perspective, but they carry deeper, I would say, relationship in terms of the customers wanting to recommend, yes, he is a valued vendor, right? And you can trust on him. And the other is in terms of business drivers, right? You should have a good understanding in terms of what impacts your business, right? The impact can be from innovations or other aspects as well. So these points are covered under culture. Thank you.